This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to spend the rest of today's program talking about a landmark moment in Massachusetts history. Tomorrow marks 40 years since federal judge Arthur Garrity ruled that the Boston School Committee had deliberately created two school systems, one for whites, one for blacks. Garrity issued a decision that created a firestorm of controversy and still resonates in Boston today.
We are, of course, talking about the Boston busing crisis. On June 21st, 1974, Garrity ordered that students be bused across the city in order to desegregate schools. Now, a little later in the show, we'll talk more with people who were directly affected by the crisis and we'll take your calls. But first, WBUR's Bruce Gellerman looks back at 40 years later from Judge Garrity's court order. And this note, there is offensive racial language in this report.
It took Judge Wendell Arthur Garrity 15 months to decide the case. Some facts are not in dispute. Boston schools were segregated. Some schools in Roxbury were 90% black. In South Boston, nearly 100% of the students were white. The Boston School Committee said that's just the way it was. It's where people chose to live. But black parents in the city wanted more for their kids. Jim Vrabel, author of the soon-to-be-released book A People's History of the New Boston, puts busing right up there with the American Revolution. Though busing in Boston was more a civil war. The battlefield, the city. The fight between neighborhoods and neighbors.
This all started in the black community because although the schools were not providing a good education for anyone, they were providing a particularly bad one for the students in the black community.
Some white schools lack libraries and cafeterias. Some black schools lack classrooms, books, even teachers. In the mid-1960s, just one Boston school teacher in 200 was black. Among them was Jean McGuire.
My son went all the way through school till his senior year. He never saw a black man, not a custodian, not a teacher, not a counselor. Can you imagine your kids going all the way through school and never seeing a white teacher?
At the same time, there wasn't a single black principal in the entire Boston school system. Historian Jim Vrabel.
The reason Boston schools began to deteriorate was that the school system became less of an educational system and more a patronage system. Teachers and administrators were hired based on who they knew rather than what they knew.
In 1965, the Massachusetts legislature passed the Racial Imbalance Act, requiring schools with more than 50% of students of one race to desegregate. The Boston School Committee refused to comply. All five members elected at large were white.
It was clear to me when I was hired in 1972 that the day was going to come when chickens would come home to roost.
Bob Schwartz, now a professor emeritus of education at Harvard, was Boston Mayor Kevin White's advisor on education when the civil rights lawsuit was filed against the school committee.
At every point where the school committee had a choice, the school committee opted for segregation.
In 1965, more than a decade after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that separate but equal schools were unconstitutional, a black parent confronted Boston School Committee member Louise Day Hicks, a staunch opponent of school desegregation.
Any school that is predominantly Negro in Boston is an inadequate school.
Mrs. Johnson, the superintendent of schools, has stated as his policy that a racially imbalanced school is not educationally harmful.
Well, Mrs. Hicks, Madam Chairman, may I say this? Superintendent Orenberger and yourself and other committee members do not have children in a racially imbalanced school, so you do not know what the effect is on our children.
People were tired of fighting and not winning.
Jean McGuire says black parents took matters into their own hands. They boycotted Boston schools and started separate freedom classes for their children. They began organizing buses and carpools to take inner-city black students to suburban white schools. And finally, black parents and the NAACP made a federal case out of it, suing the Boston School Committee using the state's Racial Imbalance Act.
And now you had a law that now had teeth to it, but you had to put in the structure that made those teeth bite.
On June 21st, 1974, Judge Garrity bit hard, declaring Boston School Committee had deliberately created two school systems, one black, one white. Garrity's remedy was busing. He ordered black and white students to attend schools in each other's neighborhoods. Garrity decided to begin busing that very year. He ordered black high school students from Roxbury be bused to South Boston, an all-white Irish enclave, and South Boston students bused to Roxbury. The reaction by some white parents was angry and swift.
Just because I'm white doesn't doesn't mean that the 14th Amendment doesn't apply to me either. I am white and I want my rights.
Just days before busing was to start, hundreds of white students and parents, with the support of the school committee, attended a rally in Government Center. They directed their rage at Senator Ted Kennedy, a backer of Garrity's busing plan, as he entered the Boston Federal Building.
Those people out there don't care to listen to you.
But this was just prelude to what would come 3 days later when school started. Parents jeered as school buses from Roxbury arrived at South Boston High. Black and white students entered through different doors guarded by police. Of 1,300 black students assigned to South Boston, only 100 showed up that day. In Roxbury, just 13 white students from South Boston went to school. Former mayoral education aide Bob Schwartz.
I was nominally the education person, but there wasn't much education to be had during that period of time. In the early years, it was basically just trying to keep kids from being killed.
Things got worse. State police and the National Guard were called in. A black student stabbed a white student at South Boston High. An angry mob hauled a black cab driver from his car and brutally beat him. Jean McGuire.
I remember riding the buses to protect the kids going up to South Boston High School, and the bricks through the window, signs hanging out those buildings, "Nigger, go home," pictures of monkeys, the words, the spit. People just felt it was all right to attack children. And yet we prevailed.
In 1977, Jean McGuire became the first of two black candidates elected to the Boston School Committee. She's now executive director of METCO, an organization that provides voluntary busing for Boston black students to schools in the suburbs.
It isn't the bus you're talking about. You have to be really honest. It has nothing to do with transportation. Everybody in the suburbs rides a bus to school if they're not driving their cars. And it isn't the bus, it's us. It's who you live next to, who you think your kids are going to marry.
Are we better off for Garrity's decision?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of education isn't just this book stuff. It's how to get along as a city and look out for each other. You had to break the mold.
But breaking the mold would not help a broken school system. Critics say simply busing poor kids from one failed school to another could never create a more equal and integrated school system. Amid the chaos, some 30,000 students, mostly white, left Boston public schools for parochial in private schools. A decade after his decision, Judge Garrity continued to oversee his plan to desegregate the city schools.
Desegregation is not an event. It's a process. There's work that remains to be done. And the challenges of the future, I do believe, are greater than the challenges of the past.
In 1960, 90% of Boston was white. Today, it's about 50%. But now, only 13% of Boston's public school students are white.
Oh, he got the problem right. He got the decision right. It was the remedy that he didn't get right.
Boston historian Jim Vrabel says Judge Garrity moved too fast and should have taken more time to address the deeper problems of class, social, and educational.
His plan was a failure of public policy. For the last 40 years, we've been pursuing a mathematical solution to desegregate the Boston public schools instead of an educational solution to improve them.
15 years ago, the Boston School Committee ended the use of race as a factor in assigning students to schools. 2 months later, Judge W. Arthur Garrity died at home in Wellesley. He was 79. At his death, then-Boston Mayor Tom Menino said, whether you agreed or disagreed with his opinion a generation ago, everyone can agree that Judge Garrity's influence on our city will be felt for a long time to come.
That report from WBUR's Bruce Gellerman. Listeners, did you live through that era? What's the legacy of busing 40 years later? We want to hear your thoughts and experiences. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. And welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And we're talking now about the federal court ruling 40 years ago that required Boston to desegregate its schools, touching off a period of racial tension and violence. The impact of Judge Arthur Garrity's decision and of busing remains a source of intense emotion and debate in Boston even today. And we're going to talk about that now.
Listeners, did you live through that era? Was Judge Garrity right? Or was his decision an example of social engineering run amok? What's the legacy of busing 40 years later? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also comment on our Facebook page or send us a tweet at Radio Boston.
And with us now is Boston historian Jim Vrabel. He's the author of the forthcoming book, A People's History of the New Boston. You heard him in Bruce Gellerman's piece that we just heard. And Jim Vrabel, welcome. Good to have you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Also with us is Donna Bivens. 40 years ago, she had just moved from Ohio to Boston. She directs the Union of Minority Neighborhoods Boston Busing Desegregation Project, which conducted interviews with people directly affected by busing and desegregation. And Donna Bivens, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Good to have you.
Glad to be here.
And from New York, Michael Patrick McDonald. He grew up in South Boston. During that time, he writes about his experiences in his book, All Souls, A Family Story from Southie. Michael Patrick McDonald, good to have you back on Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Jim Vrabel, I want to start with you and sort of pick up where Bruce Gellerman's piece ended with regard to Judge Garrity's decision in desegregation order. You said he got the problem right. He got the decision right. It was the remedy he didn't get right. So talk about that. If the problem was deliberate desegregation on the part of the Boston School Committee, why was forced busing a mistake?
Well, the problem was deliberate segregation on the part of
right.
the school committee. And the answer to your question is contained in the question, the idea of forced busing as a remedy. The details of public policy are very important. There was a better way to go about desegregating the schools, and the key to this is improving the schools. Unfortunately, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the busing decision. It would be better if we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of June 11th, 1963, when Ruth Batson and Paul Parks and other members of the black community brought their concerns to the school committee. They issued a list of 14 demands. Only one of them referred to de facto segregation. The others were improving the school system.
Mm.
Had the
effort been about making these schools better rather than busing kids back and forth, you think we might be having a different conversation today?
Oh, I think we definitely would be.
Yeah. Michael Patrick McDonald, let me come to you. You were a young school-age kid in South Boston when Garrity's decisions came down. You write about this very eloquently in All Souls. Tell us how you think about that decision and the trouble that followed and how you think about it 40 years later.
Well, I agree that something had to be done about the school committee's real blatant segregation of the school system in Boston at the time, and they're intransigent over a number of years. Intransigence and just refusal to even listen to the pleas of parents in the black community in Boston, whose schools were in terrible condition, along with a lot of schools throughout the city of Boston, including South Boston schools, but were especially horrible in a way that's documented well in the book Death at an Early Age by Jonathan Kozol. So I agree that that something had to be done. I think it's unfortunate that the judge wasn't really aware of the difference between or among the census tracts in Boston, especially among the census tracts in white Boston. A lot of times when things are looked at only in according to race, people from communities like mine, namely poor white people, get lumped in with that white thing. And so we get lost in the statistics of neighborhoods like West Roxbury, which were much more stable, working to middle class neighborhoods that had probably better graduation rates, certainly better attendance to college rates. South Boston High School, before busing was implemented, had a 5% attendance to college rate. Highest concentration of white poverty in America was in the lower end, 75% single-parent, female-headed households.
So, Michael, is the point here that a lot of these white kids in South Boston were dealing with some of the same economic disadvantages that the black kids in Roxbury were dealing with?
Yes, and we always have to deal with racism in this country. We definitely have to work to remedy all of this history that is very real and ongoing in this country. But I'm just saying that in addition to that, we need to look at class, of course. Mm. And it's not an either or thing. And I think that it was only looked at as a racial remedy.
Well, I want to come back to this this point that you make about class, but first let me come to you, Donna Bevins. Tell us what you recall about that era. You were a young college graduate. You just arrived in Boston from Ohio. What struck you about what was happening in this city around race 40 years ago?
Well, what struck me was that I had come from an all-black neighborhood. Well, I'd gone to college near here, so that was one transition period. But for the most part, I'd come from being raised in all-black neighborhoods in the Midwest, in Dayton, Ohio, and in the South. And so I was trying to understand racism. I didn't really understand it. I understood it probably as bigotry, the throwing rocks and that kind of thing. But I didn't understand and had to understand. I feel like I've spent most of my life trying to understand systemic racism and how it. I agree with the class piece, but I also think that you can, I'd add that in our country, you cannot separate race and class. They're so
absolutely
intertwined. They're so. They fit together. And so I think a lot of my work was trying to understand those two. And so for me, when I think of busing in quotes, and I always put it in quotation marks, even that really confuses the issues of race and class that got lifted up with the desegregation order. Mm. We've come to understand through reading and through listening to people that the And I think this is what was referred to in the piece that you ran, that the goal, the vision was quality education for all, for everyone. And that has been a vision since public education started in this country. And so that's one part. But then the other thing is the strategy of using desegregation. Desegregation was just a strategy to get to quality education for black people at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the tactic was busing. That was one of many tactics that came out of the out of the decision. There were also orders about who taught in the schools. You know, it was the place to open up to new teachers who are black and other people of color. Things around parent involvement. There's so many things that we've learned that were a part of the desegregation order. And so, even calling it busing continues us to focus on a very small part of the history instead of really stepping back and looking at what it really meant to desegregate the city, how long it took to desegregate the nation. And we still aren't at integration.
Well, that's the thing. I'm so glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you about this word, Jim Vrabel, desegregation versus integration. Might it have, you know, would it have been different if Judge Garrity had been talking about integration?
No, I don't think so at all. In fact, Judge Garrity made a point. He told the late Herb Gleason, who was corporation counsel at the time, and he said, "Mr. Gleason, this is a desegregation case, not an integration case." Hmm. The case was, in Garrity's mind, to undo what the school committee had done. And there are so many misperceptions about this. The school committee had actively created segregation where either none existed or promoted it and accelerated it where it hadn't. Most of the people in Boston, especially the white community, were under the impression that their kids were being assigned to neighborhood schools. But they weren't. For the course of the 1960s and 1970s, the school committee was busing children past their neighborhood schools to put them into segregated schools. So especially the white community was sold a bill of goods on that.
Well, speaking of being sold a bill of goods, and Michael Patrick McDonald, I want to come back to this idea that you brought up, the whole issue around, rather than race, around social class. And I want to play a piece of tape that underscores this point. Last summer, our own Dolores Handy Brown interviewed Ken Guscott, who was the former head of the Boston NAACP. And here's what he said about the Roxbury schools and the South Boston schools at the time of Judge Garrity's decision.
They were poor and we were poor, but they didn't know they were poor. The amount of money that they allocated to the Sherwin School and the black schools were around $250 per pupil. The white schools got double that amount up at Hyde Park and Rosendale. They got $450 per student. But the South Boston kids got less than Roxburgh. And we tried to let the white people know that in South Boston that they're pitting us two poor people fighting each other.
Michael, what do you hear in that? I mean, this seems to sort of be germane to one of the points that I've talked to you about over the years.
Right. I mean, that's just something that's not talked about enough because, on one hand, because we get lumped in, as he was expressing, we get lumped in with the statistics of places like West Roxbury or just white people in general. And the other thing is that, you know, my neighbors were also abiding by a kind of code of silence, not only about Whitey Bulger and crime and death around that stuff, but also our poverty. I mean, there really was a lot of denial around that. So it was kind of a two-way street. We weren't really making a lot of noise about poverty and depression and things like that, because things like that make you other. And the last thing anybody wanted to be was other. They already knew that they were other. They already felt that they were other. But that would confirm it, their class status. And, you know, and they clung to this hope that the white skin thing was going to work out for them one day. But based on what I saw in my neighborhood in terms of death rates and public health statistics for the past four decades, that white thing didn't really work out.
Listeners, we're talking about Judge Arthur Garrity's decision to desegregate the Boston schools, which brought about busing and the busing crisis 40 years ago tomorrow. Did you live through this era? Give us a sense of what you think about that decision. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's take a couple of calls. Jane is calling from Hingham. Jane, you're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I was a mere baby when this all went down, but my older brother was brought in as, like I said earlier, as sort of muscle to assist in the transfer of the kids into the school. And it's laughable because he was just a kid himself, being 17 or 18, you know, white kid from the suburbs, even though we were OFD. And it just, listening to him talk about that time, it was so dangerous. And then, like, I don't know who said it, but you're pitting them against each other. And they were the same. Mm. They were the same. And you bring kids into Southie to meet an angry mob. I mean, the memes to the end, I don't know. I mean, hindsight is our gift today, but it just, at the time, it was nonsensical. And
Jane, you know, I want to thank you for that recollection and that thought. I wanted to try to get another caller in. Lori is calling from Gloucester. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, my dad was a state trooper in Southie at that time, and I heard about the events of the day at the dinner table every night, and it was pretty horrifying, and I also was very concerned about him because he was caught up in some riots at that time as well. But and I wish he'd write a book about it, but I don't think he will. But what I want to say as an educator is we are still having these same problems, except it's more class-based, and people are choosing, like I live on Boston's Tony North Shore, and people are choosing to move to higher income communities with the hope that they can escape dealing with people from a different class. And it's kind of sad, and it also does affect our schools. I know in neighboring communities, some of the schools have more than what other schools have, and it, you know, it's a shame, and it has to stop.
All right, Lori, thanks so much for that call. Jim Vrabel, there's Lori sort of raising this idea that, well, not a whole lot has changed in a really fundamental way if the fundamental issue is improving education for all kids.
Well, I'd like to also pick up on something that the first caller said.
Sure.
She mentioned OFD, and for those who are not familiar with the term, it means originally from Dorchester. And one
I'm
of
glad
the,
you straightened that out for us. Thank you.
And one of the worst impacts of busing was that it drove 30,000 students out of the system in the next over the next 5 years. That's a third of the constituency for Boston's public schools. Most of those were working class people who were able to move to outside of Boston to places where their kids could go to the local school, something people have traditionally wanted to have happen. The fact that they left Boston accelerated a trend we see today. Boston's become a city of the rich and the poor, and the middle has gone out. There's the rungs of the ladder of opportunity are gone, and to a large degree, busing has created that problem.
Donna, I'd love to ask you to tell us something about the interviews you conducted for the Union of Minority Neighborhoods Boston Busing Desegregation Project. I'm curious what you hear from people, what you heard from people in those interviews, and what it tells you about the way they're processing the legacy of this era that we're talking about.
Well, we've done interviews with people who were one-on-one interviews with people who were here then, and we've also done what we call story circles with a wide diversity of people throughout the city and even outside the city at times. And I think the main things that we've learned, that we've heard, are from people within, people who are part of it, is the complexity and how the sort of master narrative does not include the full complexity, so that we've really tried to listen to the story of African American, of people of African descent, black people, of white people, of Asian Americans and Latinos, because they have such different relationships to that history. And for us, definitely class and race are equally important. But we feel that because we don't look at how different peoples look at it racially anymore, we miss a lot of the nuances and a lot of the things that really entrench some of the complexity and keep repeating patterns of racism and of income inequality. The other thing from people who aren't here is that there's a way that it's almost like people feel that this is a Boston issue. And if you weren't here then, you don't have anything to say about it. And what we hear from people who weren't born this then is that we need to understand this. It helps us understand some of the things that we're facing today. And for people who aren't from here, that what we hear is that we have a desegregation story too. We're bringing some wisdom and some knowledge and some understanding from our own histories that need to be included as Boston talks about its history.
Jim Vrabel, we only have about a minute left, but I want to just ask you a sort of final idea, and if time remains, Michael Patrick, from you as well, but if we accept the idea that segregated schools are bad, and I think most of us do, and if we accept that the idea that schools in Boston were segregated, and of course they were, I have a hard time understanding what Judge Garrity could have done beyond recognizing those two things. In other words, if not busing, then what? What should he have done?
I think Judge Garrity should have recognized how people are willing to live their lives. People would have been willing to engage in some form of desegregation. They might not have been able to send their kids to the next school over, but maybe the school after that or the school after that, if the problem had been explained to them differently. I also want to say that while busing, the assignment plan that Judge Garrity settled on was a failure, the court order was not a failure. It ended the lack of inequity in resources among the schools. It led to more hiring of minority teachers and administrators. It led to school buildings being fixed up across the city. It was the student assignment process of busing that was the failure.
Was the failure, and obviously...
And can I add that the lack of inclusion of the suburbs and all of this stuff had to do with the Racial Imbalance Act, which only says that your schools were racially imbalanced if a majority of your students were minority. So that meant that schools in Newton that were 100% white were not held accountable to a thing called racial balance.
All right. Michael Patrick McDonald, author of All Souls, A Family Story from Southie. Michael Patrick McDonald, thank you. And Jim Vrabel, Boston historian, author of the forthcoming book, Boston, A People's History of the New Boston. Jim Vrabel, thank you.
Thank you.
And Donna Bevins, director of the Union of Minority Neighborhoods Boston Busing Desegregation Project. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And listeners, that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.